Bob Buck has been flying airplanes for 75 years. He made his first transcontinental flight when he was only 16. It was 1930, an exciting time to be in the cockpit.
You know, I flew 7 years before I ever flew an airplane that had a radio in it. You believed in the compass and very carefully plotted your course and tried to judge what the wind was and apply it to the course so you'd get where you were going. And it was a lot of basic stuff, the compass and flying headings and reading the wind and all that sort of thing. And also developing a great ability to read a map and know where you were.
Buck met Charles Lindbergh and Amelia Earhart during those early years of aviation, and in 1937 he began a long career as an airline pilot with TWA, known then as Transcontinental and Western Air. He was 23 years old.
When I was a young captain, and I looked young, some lady said to the hostess, is that the co-pilot? And she said, no, that's the captain. She got off the airplane at Pittsburgh.
You were flying DC-2s, and the co-pilot in those days had to hand crank the landing gear.
Pump it up and down. We had a long arm lever, of, I don't know, 30 inches long, and you'd grab that and pump. It'd run about 69 strokes to get that gear up, and it was, they were hard strokes. And the captain, if he was a good guy, he would hold the airplane level and let it fly while you pump the gear up. If he was a guy you didn't like, he'd pull the airplane up in a rapid climb, which put G's on the gear so it was harder to pump.
You guys at TWA had a big rivalry with Pan Am and used to play little tricks on each other out there.
Yeah, when Pan Am first got on the North Atlantic, they'd spent their lives down at the southern climbs, and ice and things like that were a little new to them. But we had been roustabouts going in and out of Chicago and heavy traffic areas and all that sort of thing. And we'd learned tricks where we could jump ahead of another guy. We quickly learned that when Pan Am descended, they descended at a slow rate of speed. And they started their descent at a certain place, going into London, for example, coming over Ireland. So you'd call for clearance to descend before them and then descend at a high rate of speed, go under and pass them and beat them into London. That didn't last too long because they got onto it too. Yeah, it was always a rivalry. We called them Pandemonium World Scareways. And their motto was the world's most experienced airline. So we were always kidding about them being up there getting experience.
You speak fondly of the Constellation. This was the plane with the three tail fins, right?
Yeah, it was a great airplane. Prior to that, we were mostly flying DC-4s, which were unpressurized and slowish, 180 to 200 miles an hour, down in a lot of weather, particularly in the North Atlantic. And then here comes a Connie that'll cruise 300 miles an hour, and we can easily fly it at 18,000 feet on top of a big portion of the weather. It was just a whole new world, a great step in the advancement. The pressurization. The Stratoliners were pressurized, but we didn't operate them that long because the war started. But with the pressurization and the speed, the Connie was the entry to the new era of flight.
You had an interesting war. You remained a civilian, but you flew supply missions all over the place.
For me, it was a wonderful war because I was able to poke out. Weather has always been my major interest, and I was able to put my nose in any kind of weather I wanted to fly through.
In fact, you went looking for it. You did weather research in a B-17.
Yeah, that was it. We'd sit around waiting until the weather was bad and then go fly through it. We were particularly interested in snow, so we did a lot of flying in the far north. And in thunderstorm things, in the wintertime, we'd chase down to South America, northern, around Colombia, and looking for thunderstorms to poke our nose in. And we finally made a trip all the way around the world, and we tried weather in various places. But the best, wildest weather you'll ever find in thunderstorms is right in the Midwest of the United States.
Yeah, tornadoes.
The tornadoes. You see, the cold air from the north is unimpeded by any mountain range coming clear down through the Midwest. And the Gulf air coming up from the south, warm and humid, is unimpeded by any mountains or anything. So when the two get together, there's quite a fracas.
So naturally, TWA would be headquartered right there.
We did a lot of bad weather flying. Kansas City over to Albuquerque going. I remember there's one station, Gage. I think Gage is in Oklahoma. And God, we used to run into thunderstorms in that area that were unbelievable. And then Chicago to Kansas City, we called it the Great White Way because it'd be lit up about half the time in the summer with thunderstorms of all shapes and sizes. And when I got into thunderstorm research, I did some after the B-17 and a P-61 Black Widow night fighter, where I was deliberately, with radar help, finding my way into them. I never flew one in all that research that was any worse than one I'd flown on the line, a DC-2 or 3.
What were you flying at the end of your career? 747, 757?
Yeah, 747. Mm-hmm.
The planes you flew at the end there, I mean, they have all these computers and fancy equipment. You were a guy who knew about celestial navigation. You knew about the stars and could fly that way.
From when I first started using my finger pointing at a map to through celestial and other Doppler navigational array and so forth. And all of a sudden I sit down one day and I say, all that's gone. There's no need to me to know any of that or anybody else to know any of it. It's finished and over and done with. There's a certain sadness in that. But the memory and the experience still lives with me. And whenever I look up in the night sky, it's the stars. It's almost like seeing old friends.
88-year-old aviator Bob Buck still flies gliders in Vermont. His memoir is titled North Star Over My Shoulder, A Flying Life.